Disc 3.
Chapter 8. It was a moment or two before anyone took in what she was saying. Carrie Louise said incredulously, "Christian shot? Dead? Oh, surely that's impossible." "If you don't believe me," said Miss Belliver, pursing her lips and addressing not so much Carrie Louise as the assembled company, "go and look for yourselves." She was angry, and her anger sounded in the crisp sharpness of her voice. Slowly, unbelievingly, Carrie Louise took a step towards the door. Louis Sericold put a hand on her shoulder. "No, dearest, let me go." He went out through the doorway. Dr. Maverick, with a doubtful glance at Edgar, followed him. Miss Belliver went with them. Miss Marple gently urged Carrie Louise into a chair. She sat down, her eyes looking hurt and stricken. "Christian shot?" she said again. It was the bewildered, hurt tone of a child. Walter Hudd remained close to Edgar Lawson, glowering down at him. In his hand he held the gun that he had picked up from the floor. Mrs. Sericold said in a wondering voice, "But who could possibly want to shoot Christian?" It was not a question that demanded an answer. Walter muttered under his breath, "Nuts, the whole lot of them." Stephen had moved protectively closer to Gina. Her young, startled face was the most vivid thing in the room. Suddenly the front door opened and a rush of cold air, together with a man in a big overcoat, came in. The heartiness of his greeting seemed incredibly shocking.
"Well, hello, everybody. What's going on tonight? A lot of fog on the road. I had to go dead slow."
For a startled moment, Miss Marple thought that she was seeing double. Surely the same man could not be standing by Gina and coming in by the door. Then she realized that it was only a likeness, and not, when you looked closely, such a very strong likeness. The two men were clearly brothers with a strong family resemblance, but no more. Where Stephen Resterick was thin to the point of emaciation, the newcomer was sleek. The big coat with the astrakhan collar fitted the sleekness of body snugly. A handsome young man, and one who bore upon him the authority and good humour of success. But Miss Marple noted one thing about him. His eyes, as he entered the hall, looked immediately at Gina. He said a little doubtfully, "You did expect me. You got my wire." He was speaking now to Carrie Louise. He came towards her. Almost mechanically, she put out her hand to him. He took it and kissed it gently. It was an affectionate act of homage, not a mere theatrical courtesy. She murmured, "Of course, Alex, dear, of course. Only, you see, things have been happening."
"Happening?"
Mildred gave the information, gave it with a kind of grim relish that Miss Marple found distasteful. "Christian Gulbranson," she said, "my brother, Christian Gulbranson, has been found shot dead."
"Good God!"
Alex registered a more than life-size dismay.
"What, suicide, you mean?"
Carrie Louise moved swiftly. "Oh, no," she said, "it couldn't be suicide, not Christian, oh, no."
"Uncle Christian would never shoot himself, I'm sure," said Gina.
Alex Resterick looked from one person to the other. From his brother Stephen he received a short, confirmative nod. Walter Hudd stared back at him with a faint resentment. Alex's eyes rested on Miss Marple with a sudden frown. It was as though he had found some unwanted prop on a stage set. He looked as though he would like her explained. But nobody explained her, and Miss Marple continued to look an old, fluffy, and sweetly bewildered old lady.
"When?" asked Alex. "When did this happen, I mean?"
"Was just before you arrived," said Gina. "About, oh, 3 or 4 minutes ago, I suppose."
"But why, of course, we actually heard the shot. Only we didn't notice it, I mean, not really."
"Didn't notice it? Why not?"
"Well, you see, there were other things going on.
Gina spoke rather hesitantly.
"Sure were," said Walter with emphasis.
Juliet Bellever came into the hall by the door from the library.
"Mr. Sericold suggests that we should all wait in the library. It would be convenient for the police. Except for Mrs. Sericold. You've had a shock, Cara. I've ordered some hot bottles to be put in your bed. I'll take you up and..."
Rising to her feet, Carrie Louise shook her head. "I must see Christian first," she said.
"Oh, no, dear. Don't upset yourself."
Carrie Louise put her very gently to one side. "Dear Jolly, you don't understand." She looked round and said, "Jane?" Miss Marple had already moved towards her. "Come with me, will you, Jane?" They moved together towards the door. Dr. Maverick, coming in, almost collided with them. Miss Bellever exclaimed,
"Look, Dr. Maverick, do stop her. So foolish."
Carrie Louise looked calmly at the young doctor. She even gave a tiny smile. Dr. Maverick said,
"You want to go and see him?"
"I must."
"I see."
He stood aside.
"If you feel you must, Mrs. Sericold. But afterwards, please go and lie down and let Miss Bellever look after you. At the moment, you do not feel the shock, but I assure you that you will do so."
"Yes, I expect you're right. I'll be quite sensible. Come, Jane." The two women moved out through the door, past the foot of the main staircase and along the corridor, past the dining room on the right and the double doors leading to the kitchen quarters on the left, past the side door to the terrace and on to the door that gave admission to the oak suite that had been allotted to Christian Gulbrandsen. It was a room furnished as a sitting room more than a bedroom, with a bed in an alcove to one side and a door leading into a dressing room and bathroom. Carrie Louise stopped on the threshold. Christian Gulbrandsen had been sitting at the big mahogany desk with a small portable typewriter open in front of him. He sat there now, but slumped sideways in the chair. The high arms of the chair prevented him from slipping to the floor. Louis Sericold was standing by the window. He had pulled the curtain a little aside and was gazing out into the night. He looked round and frowned.
"My dearest, you shouldn't have come."
He came towards her, and she stretched out a hand to him. Miss Marple retreated a step or two.
"Oh, yes, Louis, I had to see him. One has to know just exactly how things are."
She walked slowly towards the desk. Louis said warningly,
"Now, you mustn't touch anything. The police must have things left exactly as we found them."
"Of course."
"He was shot deliberately by someone, then?"
"Oh, yes." Louis Sericold looked a little surprised that the question had even been asked.
"I thought you knew that."
"I did, really. Christian would not commit suicide. He was such a competent person that it could not possibly have been an accident. That only leaves..." She hesitated a moment. "Murder." She walked up behind the desk and stood looking down at the dead man. There was sorrow and affection in her face. "Dear Christian," she said, "he was always good to me." Softly, she touched the top of his head with her fingers. "Bless you, and thank you, dear Christian," she said. Louis Sericold said with something more like emotion than Miss Marple had ever seen in him before, "I wish to God I could have spared you this, Caroline." His wife shook her head gently. "You can't really spare anyone anything," she said. "Things always have to be faced sooner or later. And therefore it had better be sooner. I'll go and lie down now. I suppose you'll stay here, Louis, until the police come?"
"Yes."
Carrie Louise turned away, and Miss Marple slipped an arm round her. Chapter 9. Inspector Curry and his entourage found Miss Bellever alone in the great hall when they arrived. She came forward efficiently.
"I'm Juliet Bellever, companion and secretary to Mrs. Sericold."
"It was you who found the body and telephoned to us?"
"Yes. Most of the household are in the library through that door there. Mr. Sericold remained in Mr. Kilbranson's room to see that nothing was disturbed. Dr. Maverick, who first examined the body, will be here very shortly. He had to take a case over to the other wing. Shall I lead the way?"
"If you please." "Competent woman," thought the inspector to himself. "Seems to have got the whole thing taped." He followed her along the corridor. For the next 20 minutes, the routine of police procedure was duly set in motion. The photographer took the necessary pictures. The police surgeon arrived and was joined by Dr. Maverick. Half an hour later, the ambulance had taken away the mortal remains of Christian Gulbranson, and Inspector Curry started his official interrogation. Louis Sericold took him into the library, and he glanced keenly round the assembled people, making brief notes in his mind. An old lady with white hair, a middle-aged lady, the good-looking girl he'd seen driving her car round the countryside, that sulky-looking American husband of hers. A couple of young men who were mixed up in the outfit somewhere or other, and the capable woman, Miss Bellever, who'd phoned him and met him on arrival. Inspector Curry had already thought out a little speech, and he now delivered it as planned. "I'm afraid this has all been very upsetting to you," he said, "and I hope not to keep you too long this evening. We can go into things more thoroughly tomorrow. It was Miss Bellever who found Mr. Gulbranson dead, and I'll ask Miss Bellever to give me an outline of the general situation, as that will save too much repetition. Mr. Sericold, if you want to go up to your wife, please do, and when I've finished with Miss Bellever, I should like to talk to you. Is that all quite clear? Perhaps there's a small room where..." Louis Sericold said, "My office, Jolly." Miss Bellever nodded and said, "I was just going to suggest it." She led the way across the great hall, and Inspector Curry and his attendant sergeant followed her. Miss Bellever arranged them and herself suitably. It might have been she and not Inspector Curry who was in charge of the investigation. The moment had come, however, when the initiative passed to him. Inspector Curry had a pleasant voice and manner. He looked quiet and serious and just a little apologetic. Some people made the mistake of underrating him. Actually, he was as competent in his way as Miss Bellever was in hers. But he preferred not to make a parade of the fact. He cleared his throat. "I've had the main facts from Mr. Sericold. Mr. Christian Gulbranson was the eldest son of the late Eric Gulbranson, the founder of the Gulbranson Trust and Fellowships, and all the rest of it. He was one of the trustees of this place, and he arrived here unexpectedly yesterday. That is correct?"
"Yes."
Inspector Curry was pleased by her conciseness. He went on, "Mr. Sericold was away in Liverpool. He returned this evening by the 6:30 train."
"Yes."
"After dinner this evening, Mr. Gulbranson announced his intention of working in his own room and left the rest of the party here after coffee had been served, correct?"
"Yes."
"Now, Miss Bellever, please tell me in your own words how you came to discover him dead."
"Well, there was a rather unpleasant incident this evening. A young man, a psychopathic case, became very unbalanced and threatened Mr. Sericold with a revolver. They were locked in this room. The young man eventually fired the revolver. You can see the bullet holes in the wall there. Fortunately, Mr. Sericold was unhurt. After firing the shots, this young man went completely to pieces. Mr. Cerakold sent me to find Dr. Maverick. I got through on the house phone, but he was not in his room. I found him with one of his colleagues and gave him the message, and he came here at once. On my way back, I went to Mr. Gilbranson's room. I wanted to ask him if there was anything he would like, hot milk or whiskey, before settling for the night. I knocked, but there was no response. So I opened the door. I saw that Mr. Gilbranson was dead. I then rang you up.
Now, what entrances and exits are there to the house, and how are they secured? Could anyone have come in from the outside without being heard or seen?
Well, anyone could have come in by the side door to the terrace. That is not locked until we all go to bed, if people come in and out that way, to the college buildings.
And you have, I believe, between 200 and 250 juvenile delinquents in the college?
Yes. But the college buildings are well secured and patrolled. I should say it was most unlikely that anyone could leave the college unsponsored.
Well, we shall have to check up on that, of course. Had Mr. Gilbranson given any cause for, shall we say, rancour? Any unpopular decisions as to policy?
Miss Beliver shook her head.
Oh, no. Mr. Gilbranson had nothing whatever to do with the running of the college, or with administrative matters.
What was the purpose of his visit?
I have no idea.
But he was annoyed to find Mr. Cerakold absent, and immediately decided to wait until he returned.
Yes.
So, his business here was definitely with Mr. Cerakold.
Yes, but it would be... because it would be almost certainly business to do with the Institute.
Yes, presumably that is so. Did he have a conference with Mr. Cerakold?
No, there was no time. Mr. Cerakold only arrived just before dinner this evening.
But after dinner, Mr. Gilbranson said he had important letters to write and went away to do so. He didn't suggest a session with Mr. Cerakold.
Miss Beliver hesitated.
No, he didn't.
Surely that was rather odd, if he had waited on at inconvenience to himself to see Mr. Cerakold.
Yes, it was odd.
The oddness of it seemed to strike Miss Beliver for the first time.
Mr. Cerakold did not accompany him to his room?
No. Mr. Cerakold remained in the hall.
And you have no idea at what time Mr. Gilbranson was killed?
Well, I think it is possible that we heard the shot. If so, it was at 9:23. You heard a shot.
And it did not alarm you?
Well, the circumstances were peculiar.
She explained in rather more detail the scene between Lewis Cerakold and Edgar Lawson, which had been in progress.
So it occurred to no one that the shot might actually have come from within the house.
Well, no. No, I certainly don't think so. We were all so relieved, you know, that the shot didn't come from in here.
Miss Beliver added rather grimly,
"Well, you don't expect murder and attempted murder in the same house on the same night."
Inspector Curry acknowledged the truth of that.
"All the same," said Miss Beliver suddenly, "you know, I believe that's what made me go along to Mr. Gilbranson's room later. I did mean to ask him if he would like anything, but it was a kind of excuse to reassure myself that everything was all right."
Inspector Curry stared at her for a moment.
"What made you think it mightn't be all right?"
"Well, I don't know. I think it was a shot outside. It hadn't meant anything at the time, but afterwards it came back into my mind. I told myself it was only a backfire from Mr. Resterick's car."
"Mr. Resterick's car?"
"Yes. Alex Resterick. He arrived by car this evening. He arrived just after all this happened.
I see. When you discovered Mr. Gulbranson's body, did you touch anything in the room?
Of course not.
Miss Belliver sounded reproachful.
Naturally, I knew that nothing must be touched or moved.
Mr. Gulbranson had been shot through the head, but there was no firearm to be seen, so I knew it was murder.
And just now, when you took us into the room, everything was exactly as it had been when you found the body?
Miss Belliver considered. She sat back, screwing up her eyes. She had, Inspector Curry thought, one of those photographic memories.
One thing was different, she said. There was nothing in the typewriter.
You mean, said Inspector Curry, that when you first went in, Mr. Gulbranson had been writing a letter on the typewriter, and that that letter had since been removed?
Yes. I'm almost sure that I saw the white edge of the paper sticking up.
Thank you, Miss Belliver. Who else went into that room before we arrived?
Well, Mr. Sericold, of course. He remained there when I came to meet you. And Mrs. Sericold and Miss Marple went in there. Mrs. Sericold insisted.
Mrs. Sericold and Miss Marple, said Inspector Curry.
Now, which is Miss Marple? The old lady with the white hair. She was a school friend of Mrs. Sericold's. She came on a visit about 4 days ago.
Well, thank you, Miss Belliver. All that you have told us is quite clear. I'll go into things with Mr. Sericold now.
Ah, but perhaps, Miss Marple's an old lady, isn't she? I'll just have a word with her first, and then she can go off up to bed.
Rather cruel to keep an old lady like that up, said Inspector Currier virtuously. This must have been a shock to her.
I'll tell her, shall I?
If you please.
Miss Belliver went out. Inspector Curry looked at the ceiling. Gulbranson, he said. Why Gulbranson? 200-odd maladjusted youngsters on the premises. No reason any of them shouldn't have done it. Probably one of them did, but why Gulbranson? The stranger within the gates. Sergeant Lake said,
Of course, we don't know everything yet.
Inspector Curry said,
So far, we don't know anything at all.
He jumped up and was gallant when Miss Marple came in. She seemed a little flustered, and he hurried to put her at her ease.
Now, don't upset yourself, ma'am.
The old ones like ma'am, he thought. To them, police officers were definitely of the lower classes and should show respect to their betters.
Now, this is all very distressing, I know. But we've just got to get the facts clear. Get it all clear.
Oh, yes, I know, said Miss Marple. So difficult, isn't it? To be clear about anything, I mean. Because if you're looking at one thing, you can't be looking at another. And one so often looks at the wrong thing. Though whether because one happens to do so or because you're meant to, it's very hard to say. Misdirection, the conjurers call it. So clever, aren't they? And I never have known how they manage with a bowl of goldfish, because really that cannot fold up small, can it?
Inspector Curry blinked a little and said soothingly, Quite so. Now, ma'am, I've had an account of this evening's events from Miss Belliver. The most anxious time for all of you, I'm sure.
Yes, indeed. It was all so dramatic, you know.
First this to do with Mr. Sericold and, he looked down at a note he had made, this Edgar Lawson.
A very odd young man, said Miss Marple. I have felt all along that there was something wrong about him. I'm sure you have, said Inspector Curry. And then, after that excitement was over, there came Mr. Culbranson's death. I understand that you went with Mrs. Sericole to see the body.
Yes, I did. She asked me to come with her. We're very old friends.
Quite so. And you went along to Mr. Culbranson's room. Did you touch anything while you were in the room, either of you?
Oh, no. Mr. Sericold warned us not to.
Did you happen to notice, ma'am, whether there was a letter or a piece of paper, say, in the typewriter?
There wasn't, said Miss Marple promptly. I noticed that at once because it seemed to me odd. Mr. Culbranson was sitting there at the typewriter, so he must have been typing something. Yes, I thought it very odd.
Inspector Curry looked at her sharply. He said, Did you have much conversation with Mr. Culbranson while he was here?
Very little.
There is nothing especial or significant that you can remember?
Miss Marple considered. He asked me about Mrs. Sericote's health, in particular about her heart.
Her heart? Is there something wrong with her heart?
Nothing whatever, I understand.
Inspector Curry was silent for a moment or two. Then he said, You heard a shot this evening during the quarrel between Mr. Sericold and Edgar Lawson.
Well, I didn't actually hear it myself. I am a little deaf, you know, but Mrs. Sericold mentioned it as being outside in the park.
Mr. Culbranson left the party immediately after dinner, I understand.
Yes, he said he had letters to write.
He didn't show any wish for a business conference with Mr. Sericold?
No. Miss Marple added, You see, they'd already had one little talk.
They had? When? I understood that Mr. Sericold only returned home just before dinner.
That's quite true, but he walked up through the park, and Mr. Culbranson went out to meet him, and they walked up and down the terrace together.
Who else knows this?
Well, I shouldn't think anybody else, said Miss Marple. Unless, of course, Mr. Sericold told Mrs. Sericold. I just happened to be looking out of my window at some birds.
Birds?
Birds. Miss Marple added after a moment or two, I thought perhaps they might be siskins.
Inspector Curry was uninterested in siskins. You didn't, he said delicately, happen to overhear anything of what they said?
Innocent china blue eyes met his. Only fragments, I'm afraid, said Miss Marple gently.
And those fragments?
Miss Marple was silent for a moment, then she said, I do not know the actual subject of their conversation, but their immediate concern was to keep whatever it was from the knowledge of Mrs. Sericold, to spare her. That was how Mr. Culbranson put it. And Mr. Sericold said, I agree that it is she who must be considered. They also mentioned a big responsibility and that they should, perhaps, take outside advice.
She paused.
I think, you know, you had better ask Mr. Sericold himself about all this.
We shall do so, ma'am. Now, there's nothing else that struck you as unusual this evening?
Miss Marple considered. Well, it was all so unusual, if you know what I mean.
It's quite so. Quite so.
Something flickered into Miss Marple's memory. There was one rather unusual incident. Mr. Sericold stopped Mrs. Sericold from taking her medicine. Miss Bellever was quite put out about it. She smiled in a deprecating fashion.
But that, of course, is such a little thing.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you, Miss Marple.
As Miss Marple went out of the room, Sergeant Lake said, "She's old, but she's sharp."
Chapter 10. Louis Sericold came into the office, and immediately the whole focus of the room shifted. He turned to close the door behind him, and in doing so he created an atmosphere of privacy. He walked over and sat down, not in the chair Miss Marple had just vacated, but in his own chair behind the desk. Miss Beliver had settled Inspector Curry in a chair drawn up to one side of the desk, as though unconsciously she had reserved Louis Sericold's chair against his coming. When he had sat down, Louis Sericold looked at the two police officers thoughtfully. His face looked drawn and tired. It was the face of a man who was passing through a severe ordeal, and it surprised Inspector Curry a little, because though Christian Gulbranson's death must have been an undeniable shock to Louis Sericold, yet Gulbranson had not been a close friend or relation, only a rather remote connection by marriage. In an odd way, the tables seemed to have been turned. It did not seem as though Louis Sericold had come into the room to answer police questioning. It seemed rather that Louis Sericold had arrived to preside over a court of inquiry. It irritated Inspector Curry a little. He said briskly,
"Now, Mr. Sericold."
Louis Sericold still seemed lost in thought. He said with a sigh,
"How difficult it is to know the right thing to do."
Inspector Curry said,
"I think we will be the judges of that, Mr. Sericold. Now, about Mr. Gulbranson. He arrived unexpectedly, I understand."
"Oh, quite unexpectedly."
"You did not know he was coming?"
"I had not the least idea of it."
"And you have no idea why he came?"
Louis Sericold said quietly, "Oh, yes. I know why he came. He told me."
"When?"
"I walked up from the station. He was watching from the house and came out to meet me. It was then that he explained what had brought him here."
"Business connected with the Gulbranston Institute, I suppose?"
"Oh, no. It was nothing to do with the Gulbranston Institute."
"Miss Beliver seemed to think it was."
"Well, naturally. That would be the assumption.
And Gulbranson did nothing to correct that impression. Neither did I."
"Why, Mr. Sericold?" Louis Sericold said slowly, "Because it seemed to both of us important that no hint should arise as to the real purpose of his visit."
"What was the real purpose?"
Louis Sericold was silent for a minute or two. He sighed.
"Gulbranson came over here regularly, twice a year, for meetings of the trustees. The last meeting was only a month ago. Consequently, he was not due to come over again for another 5 months. I think, therefore, that anyone might realize that the business that brought him must definitely be urgent business. But I still think that the normal assumption would be that it was a business visit, and that the matter, however urgent, would be a trust matter. As far as I know, Gulbranson did nothing to contradict that impression. Or thought he didn't. Yes, perhaps that is nearer the truth. He thought he didn't."
"I'm afraid, Mr. Sericold, I don't quite follow you." Louis Sericold did not answer at once. Then he said gravely, "I fully realize that with Gulbranson's death, which was murder, undeniably murder, I have got to put all the facts before you. But frankly, I am concerned for my wife's happiness and peace of mind. It is not for me to dictate to you, Inspector, but if you can see your way to keeping certain things from her as far as possible, I shall be grateful. You see, Inspector Curry, Gulbranson came here expressly to tell me
that he believed my wife was being slowly and cold-bloodedly poisoned.
What?
Currie leaned forward incredulously.
Sarah Cold nodded.
Yes. It was, as you can imagine, a tremendous shock to me.
I had had no suspicion of such a thing myself, but as soon as Christian told me, I realized that certain symptoms my wife had complained of lately were quite compatible with such a belief. What she took to be rheumatism, leg cramps, pain, and occasional sickness, all that fits in very well with the symptoms of arsenical poisoning. Miss Marple told us that Christian Gulbranson asked her about the condition of Mrs. Sericold's heart.
Oh, did he now? That's interesting. I suppose he thought that a heart poison would be used, since it paved the way to a sudden death without undue suspicion. But I think myself that arsenic is more likely.
You definitely think, then, that Christian Gulbranson's suspicions were well-founded?
Oh, yes, I think so.
For one thing, Gulbranson would hardly have come to me with such a suggestion unless he was fairly sure of his facts. And he was a cautious and hard-headed man, difficult to convince, but very shrewd.
What was his evidence?
Well, we had no time to go into that. Our interview was a hurried one. It served only the purpose of explaining his visit and a mutual agreement that nothing whatever should be said to my wife about the matter until we were sure of our facts.
And whom did he suspect of administering poison?
He did not say, and actually I don't think he knew. He may have suspected. I think now that he probably did suspect. Otherwise, why should he be killed?
But he mentioned no name to you.
No, he mentioned no name. We agreed that we must investigate the matter thoroughly, and he suggested inviting the advice and cooperation of Dr. Galbraith, the Bishop of Cromer. Dr. Galbraith is a very old friend of the Gulbransons and is one of the trustees of the Institute. He's a man of great wisdom and experience and would be of infinite help and comfort to my wife if it was necessary to tell her of our suspicions. We meant to rely on his advice as to whether or not to consult the police.
Quite extraordinary, said Currie.
Gulbranson left us after dinner to write to Dr. Galbraith. He was actually in the act of typing a letter to him when he was shot.
How do you know?
Lewis said calmly, because I took the letter out of the typewriter. I have it here. From his breast pocket, he drew out a folded typewritten sheet of paper and handed it to Currie. The latter said sharply, you shouldn't have taken this or touched anything in the room.
I touched nothing else. I know that I committed an unpardonable offence in your eyes in moving this, but I had a very strong reason. I felt certain that my wife would insist on coming into the room, and I was afraid that she might read something of what is written here. I admit myself in the wrong, but I am afraid I would do the same again. I would do anything, anything, to save my wife's unhappiness.
Inspector Currie said no more for the moment. He read the typewritten sheet. Dear Dr. Galbraith, if it is at all possible, I beg that you will come to Stony Gates as soon as you receive this. A crisis of extraordinary gravity has arisen, and I am at a loss to know how to deal with it. I know how deep your affection is for our dear Carrie Louise, and how grave your concern will be for anything that affects her. How much has she got to know? How much can we keep from her? Those are the questions that I find difficult to answer. Not to beat about the bush, I have reason to believe that sweet and innocent lady is being slowly poisoned. I first suspected this when... Here the letter broke off abruptly. Currie said, and when he had reached this point, Christian Gulbranson was shot.
Yes.
But why on earth was this letter in the typewriter?
Well, I can only conceive of two reasons. One, that the murderer had no idea to whom Gulbranson was writing and what was the subject of the letter. Secondly, he may not have had time.
He may have heard someone coming and only just had time to escape unobserved. And Gudbranson gave you no hint as to whom he suspected, if he did suspect anyone. There was perhaps a very slight pause before Lewis answered. None whatever. He added rather obscurely, Christian was a very fair man.
How do you think this poison, arsenic or whatever it may be, was or is being administered?
I thought that over while I was changing for dinner, and it seemed to me that the most likely vehicle was some medicine, a tonic that my wife was taking. As regards food, we all partake of the same dishes, and my wife has nothing specially prepared for her. But anyone could add arsenic to the medicine bottle.
Oh, we must take the medicine and have it analysed.
Lewis said quietly, I already have a sample of it. I took it this evening before dinner. From a drawer in the desk, he took out a small corked bottle with a red fluid in it. Inspector Curry said with a curious glance,
You think of everything, Mr. Sericold.
I believe in acting promptly. Tonight I stopped my wife from taking her usual dose. It is still in a glass on the oak dresser in the hall. The bottle of tonic itself is in the dining room. Curry leaned forward across the desk. He lowered his voice and spoke confidentially and without officialdom.
You'll excuse me, Mr. Sericold, but just why are you so anxious to keep this from your wife? Are you afraid she'd panic? Surely, for her own sake, it would be as well if she were warned.
Yes. Yes, that may well be so. But I don't think you quite understand. Without knowing my wife, Caroline, it would be difficult. My wife, Inspector Curry, is an idealist, a completely trustful person. Of her, it may truly be said that she sees no evil, hears no evil, and speaks no evil. It would be inconceivable to her that anyone could wish to kill her. But we have to go further than that. It is not just anyone. It is a case, surely you see that, of someone, possibly, very near and dear to her.
So that's what you think.
We have got to face facts. Close at hand, we have a couple of hundred warped and stunted personalities who have expressed themselves often enough by crude and senseless violence. But by the very nature of things, none of them can be suspect in this case. A slow poisoner is someone living in the intimacy of family life. Now think of the people who are here in this house. Her husband, her daughter, her granddaughter, her granddaughter's husband, her stepson, whom she regards as her own son, Miss Bellever, her devoted companion and friend of many years, all very near and dear to her. And yet the suspicion must arise. Is it one of them?
Curry said slowly, There are outsiders.
Yes, in a sense. There is Dr. Maverick. One or two of the staff are often with us. There are the servants. But frankly, what possible motive could they have?
Inspector Curry said, And there's young, what is his name again? Edgar Lawson.
Yes. But he has only been down here as a casual visitor just lately. He has no possible motive. Besides, he is deeply attached to Caroline, just as everyone is.
But he's unbalanced. What about this attack on you tonight?
Sericold waved it aside impatiently. Oh, sheer childishness. He had no intention of harming me.
Not with these two bullet holes in the wall. He shot at you, didn't he?
No, he didn't mean to hit me. It was play-acting, no more.
Rather a dangerous form of play-acting, Mr. Sericold.
No, you don't understand. You must talk to our psychiatrist, Dr. Maverick. Edgar is an illegitimate child. He's consoled himself for his lack of father and a humble origin by pretending to himself that he is the son of a celebrated man. It's a well-known phenomenon, I assure you. He was improving very much. Then, for some reason, he had a setback. He identified me as his father, and made a melodramatic attack, waving a revolver and uttering threats. I was not in the least alarmed. When he had actually fired the revolver, he broke down and sobbed, and Dr. Maverick took him away and gave him a sedative. He'll probably be quite normal tomorrow morning.
You don't wish to bring a charge against him?
Oh, that would be the worst thing possible. For him, I mean.
Frankly, Mr. Sarahcold, it seems to me he ought to be under restraint. People who go about firing off revolvers to bolster up their egos, one has to think of the community, you know.
Well, talk to Dr. Maverick on the subject, urged Lewis. He'll give you the professional point of view. In any case, he added, poor Edgar certainly did not shoot Gulbranson. He was in here threatening to shoot me.
That's the point I was coming to, Mr. Sarahcold. We've covered the outside. Anyone, it seems, could have come in from outside and shot Mr. Gulbranson since the terrace door was unlocked. But there is a narrower field inside the house. And in view of what you've been telling me, it seems to me that very close attention must be paid to that. It seems possible that, with the exception of old Miss... Miss Marple, who happened to be looking out of her bedroom window, no one was aware that you and Christian Gulbranson had already had a private interview. If so, Gulbranson may have been shot to prevent him communicating his suspicions to you. Of course, it's too early to say as yet what other motives may exist. Mr. Gulbranson was a wealthy man, I presume?
Yes, he was a very wealthy man. He has sons and daughters and grandchildren. All of them will probably benefit by his death. But I do not think that any of his family are in this country. And they're all solid and highly respectable people. As far as I know, there are no black sheep amongst them.
Had he any enemies?
I should think it most unlikely. He was... Well, really, he was not that type of man.
So it boils down, doesn't it, to this house and the people in it. Who, from inside the house, could have killed him?
Lewis Sarahcold said slowly,
"Well, that is difficult for me to say. There are the servants and the members of my household and our guests. They are, from your point of view, all possibilities, I suppose. I can only tell you that, as far as I know, everyone except the servants was in the great hall when Christian left it. And whilst I was there, nobody left it. Nobody at all. I think..." Lewis frowned in an effort of remembrance. "Oh, yes. Some of the lights fused. Mr. Walter Hudd went to see to it."
"That's the young American gentleman?"
"Yes. Of course, I don't know what took place after Edgar and I came in here."
"And you can't give me anything nearer than that, Mr. Sarahcold?"
Lewis Sarahcold shook his head.
"No, I'm afraid I can't help you. It's all... quite inconceivable."
Inspector Curry sighed. He said,
"Mr. Gulbranson was shot with a small automatic pistol. Do you know if anyone in the house has such a weapon?"
"I have no idea. I should think it most unlikely."
Inspector Curry sighed again. He said, "You can tell the party they can all go to bed. I'll talk to them tomorrow."
When Sarahcold had left the room, Inspector Curry said to Legge,
"Well, what do you think?"
"Knows, or thinks he knows who did it," said Legge.
"Yes,
I agree with you. And he doesn't like it a bit. Chapter 11. Gina greeted Miss Marple with a rush as the latter came down to breakfast the next morning. "The police are here again," she said. "They're in the library this time. Wally is absolutely fascinated by them. He can't understand their being so quiet and so remote. I think he's really quite thrilled by the whole thing. I'm not. I hate it. I think it's horrible. Why do you think I'm so upset? Because I'm half Italian?" "Very possibly. At least perhaps it explains why you don't mind showing what you feel." Miss Marple smiled just a little as she said this. "Oh, Charlie's frightfully cross," said Gina, hanging on Miss Marple's arm and propelling her into the dining room. "I think, really, because the police are in charge and she can't exactly run them like she runs everybody else." "Alex and Stephen," continued Gina severely as they came into the dining room where the two brothers were finishing their breakfast, "just don't care." "Gina, dearest," said Alex, "you are most unkind. Good morning, Miss Marple. I care intensely. Except for the fact that I hardly knew your Uncle Christian, I am far and away the best suspect. You do realize that, I hope?"
"Why?"
"Well, I was driving up to the house at about the right time, it seems. And they've been checking up on things, and it seems I took too much time between the lodge and the house. Time enough, the implication is, to leave the car, run round the house, go in through the side door, shoot Christian, and rush out and back to the car again."
"And what were you really doing?"
"I thought little girls were taught quite young not to ask indelicate questions. Like an idiot, I stood for several minutes taking in the fog effect in the headlights and thinking what I'd use to get that effect on a stage for my new Limehouse ballet."
"But you can tell them that."
"Naturally. But you know what policemen are like. They say thank you very civilly and write it all down, and you've no idea what they're thinking, except that one does feel they have rather sceptical minds." "It would amuse me to see you in a spot, Alex," said Stephen with his thin, rather cruel smile. "Now, I'm quite all right. I never left the hall last night."
Gina cried, "But they couldn't possibly think it was one of us."
Her dark eyes were round and dismayed. "Don't say it must have been a tramp, dear," said Alex, helping himself lavishly to marmalade. "It's so hackneyed." Miss Bellever looked in at the door and said, "Miss Marple, when you've finished your breakfast, will you go to the library?"
"You again," said Gina, "before any of us?"
She seemed a little injured. "Hi, what was that?" asked Alex. "Didn't hear anything," said Stephen. "It was a pistol shot."
"Oh, they've been firing shots in the room where Uncle Christian was killed," said Gina. "I don't know why. And outside, too."
The door opened again and Mildred Street came in. She was wearing black with some onyx beads. She murmured good morning without looking at anyone and sat down. In a hushed voice she said,
"Some tea, please, Gina. Nothing much to eat, just some toast."
She touched her nose and her eyes delicately with the handkerchief she held in one hand. Then she raised her eyes and looked in an unseeing way at the two brothers. Stephen and Alex became uncomfortable. Their voices dropped to almost a whisper, and presently they got up and left. Mildred Street said, whether to the universe or Miss Marple was not quite certain,
"Not even a black tie."
"I don't suppose," said Miss Marple apologetically, "that they knew beforehand that a murder was going to happen." Gina made a smothered sound, and Mildred Street looked sharply at her.
"Well, where's Walter this morning?" she asked.
Gina flushed.
"I don't know. I haven't seen him."
She sat there uneasily, like a guilty child. Miss Marple got up. "I'll go to the library now," she said.
Louis Sericold was standing by the window in the library. There was no one else in the room. He turned as Miss Marple came in and came forward to meet her, taking her hand in his. "I hope," he said, "that you're not feeling the worse for the shock. To be at close quarters with what is undoubtedly murder must be a great strain on anyone who has not come in contact with such a thing before." Modesty forbade Miss Marple to reply that she was by now quite at home with murder. She merely said that life in St. Mary Mead was not quite so sheltered as outside people believed. "Very nasty things go on in a village, I assure you," she said. "One has an opportunity of studying things there that one would never have in a town." Louis Sericold listened indulgently, but with only half an ear. He said very simply, "I want your help." "But of course, Mr. Sericold." "It is a matter that affects my wife, affects Caroline. I think that you are really attached to her." "Oh, yes, indeed. Everyone is." "That is what I believed. It seems that I am wrong. With the permission of Inspector Curry, I am going to tell you something that no one else as yet knows. Or perhaps I should say, what only one person knows." Briefly, he told her what he had told Inspector Curry the night before. Miss Marple looked horrified. "I can't believe it, Mr. Sericold. I really can't believe it." "Well, that is what I felt when Christian Gulbranson told me. But I should have said that dear Carrie Louise had not got an enemy in the world." "Yes, it seems incredible that she should have. But you see the implication. Poisoning, slow poisoning, is an intimate family matter. It must be one of our closely knit little household. If it is true, are you sure that Mr. Gulbranson was not mistaken?" "Christian was not mistaken. He's too cautious a man to make such a statement without foundation. Besides, the police took away Caroline's medicine bottle and a separate sample of its contents. There was arsenic in both of them. And arsenic was not prescribed. The actual quantitative tests will take longer, but the actual fact of arsenic being present is established."
"Then her rheumatism, the difficulty in walking, all that..."
"Yes. Leg cramps are typical, I understand. Also, before you came, Caroline has had one or two severe attacks of a gastric nature. I never dreamed until Christian came..." He broke off. Miss Marple said softly,
"So Ruth was right."
"Ruth?" Louis Sericold sounded surprised. Miss Marple flushed.
"There is something I have not told you. My coming here was not entirely fortuitous. If you will let me explain... I'm afraid I tell things so badly. Please have patience."
Louis Sericold listened while Miss Marple told him of Ruth's unease and urgency.
"Extraordinary," he commented. "I had no idea of this."
"It was all so vague," said Miss Marple. "Ruth herself didn't know why she had this feeling. There must be a reason. In my experience, there always is. But something wrong was as near as she could get."
Louis Sericold said grimly,
"Well, it seems that she was right. Now, Miss Marple, you see how I am placed. Am I to tell Carrie Louise of this?"
Miss Marple said quickly, "Oh, no," in a distressed voice, and then flushed and stared doubtfully at Louis. He nodded.
"So you feel as I do? As Christian Gulbranson did? Should we feel like that with an ordinary woman?"
"Carrie Louise is not an ordinary woman. She lives by her trust, by her belief in human nature. Oh, dear, I am expressing myself very badly. But I do feel that until we know who..."
"Yes, that is the crux. But you do see, Miss Marple, that there is a risk in saying nothing.
And so you want me to, how shall I put it, watch over her? You see, you are the only person whom I can trust, said Louis Sericold simply. Everyone here seems devoted, but are they? Now, your attachment goes back many years. And also, I only arrived a few days ago, said Miss Marple pertinently. Louis Sericold smiled.
Exactly.
It is a very mercenary question, said Miss Marple apologetically. But who exactly would benefit if dear Carrie Louise were to die?
Money, said Louis bitterly. It always boils down to money, doesn't it?
Well, I really think it must in this case. Because Carrie Louise is a very sweet person with a great deal of charm, and one cannot really imagine anyone disliking her. She couldn't, I mean, have an enemy. So then it does boil down, as you put it, to a question of money. Because, as you don't need me to tell you, Mr. Sericold, people will quite often do anything for money.
Yes, I suppose so, yes.
He went on. Well, naturally, Inspector Curry has already taken up that point. Mr. Guilfoy is coming down from London today and can give detailed information. Guilfoy, Guilfoy, James and Guilfoy, a very eminent firm of lawyers. This Guilfoy's father was one of the original trustees, and they drew up both Caroline's will and the original will of Eric Gulbranson. I will put it in simple terms for you.
Thank you, said Miss Marple gratefully. So mystifying, the law, I always think.
Eric Gulbranson, after the endowment of the college and various fellowships and trusts and other charitable bequests, and having settled an equal sum on his daughter Mildred and on his adopted daughter Pippa, Gina's mother, left the remainder of his vast fortune in trust, the income from it to be paid to Caroline for her lifetime.
And after her death?
After her death, it was to be divided equally between Mildred and Pippa, or their children, if they themselves had predeceased Caroline.
So that, in fact, it goes to Mrs. Street and to Gina?
Yes. Caroline has also quite a considerable fortune of her own, though not in the Gulbranson class. Half of this she made over to me 4 years ago. Of the remaining amount, she left £10,000 to Juliet Bellever, and the rest equally divided between Alex and Stephen Resterick, her two stepsons.
Oh, dear, said Miss Marple. That's bad. That's very bad.
You mean... It means everyone in the house had a financial motive.
Yes. And yet, you know, I can't believe that any of these people would do murder. I simply can't. Mildred is her daughter, and already quite well provided for. Gina is devoted to her grandmother. She's generous and extravagant, but has no acquisitive feelings. Jolly Bellever is fanatically devoted to Caroline. The two Restericks care for Caroline as though she were really their mother. They have no money of their own to speak of, but quite a lot of Caroline's income has gone towards financing their enterprises, especially so with Alex. I simply can't believe that those two would deliberately poison her for the sake of inheriting money at her death. I just can't believe any of it, Miss Marple.
There's Gina's husband, isn't there?
Yes, said Louis gravely, there is Gina's husband.
You don't really know much about him. And one can't help seeing that he's a very unhappy young man.
Louis sighed. He hasn't fitted in here, no. He's no interest in or sympathy for what we're trying to do, but after all, why should he? He's young, crude, and he comes from a country where a man is esteemed by the success he makes of life.
Whilst here we are so very fond of failures, said Miss Marple.
Louis Sericold looked at her sharply and suspiciously. She flushed a little and murmured rather incoherently,
I think sometimes, you know, one can overdo things the other way. I mean, the young people
with a good heredity and brought up wisely in a good home and with grit and pluck and the ability to get on in life, well, they are really, when one comes down to it, the sort of people a country needs. Lewis frowned, and Miss Marple hurried on, getting pinker and pinker and more incoherent. Not that I don't appreciate, I do indeed, you and Carrie Louise, a really noble work, real compassion, and one should have compassion, because, well, after all, it's what people are that counts. Good and bad luck, and much more expected, and rightly, of the lucky ones. But I do think sometimes one's sense of proportion... Oh, I don't mean you, Mr. Sericote. Well, really, I don't know what I mean. But the English are rather odd that way. Even in war. So much prouder of their defeats and their retreats than of their victories. Foreigners can never understand why we're so proud of Dunkirk. It's the sort of thing they'd prefer not to mention themselves. But we always seem to be almost embarrassed by a victory and treat it as though it weren't quite nice to boast about it. And look at all our poets. The Charge of the Light Brigade and the little Revenge went down in the Spanish Main. It's really a very odd characteristic when you come to think of it. Miss Marple drew a fresh breath. What I really mean is that everything here must seem rather peculiar to young Walter Hodd. Yes, Lewis allowed. I see your point. And Walter has certainly a fine war record. There's no doubt about his bravery. Not that that helps, said Miss Marple candidly. Because war is one thing, and everyday life is quite another. And actually to commit a murder, I do think you do need bravery, or perhaps more often, just conceit. Yes, conceit. But I would hardly say that Walter Hodd had sufficient motive, wouldn't you? Said Miss Marple. He hates it here. He wants to get away. He wants to get Gina away. And if it's really money he wants, it would be important for Gina to get all the money before she definitely forms an attachment to someone else. An attachment to someone else, said Lewis in an astonished voice. Miss Marple wondered at the blindness of enthusiastic social reformers. That's what I said. Both the Restorics are in love with her, you know.
Oh, I don't think so, said Lewis absently. He went on, well, Stephen's invaluable to us, quite invaluable. The way he's got those lads coming along, keen, interested. They gave a splendid show last month. Scenery, costumes, everything. It just shows, as I've always said to Maverick, that it's a lack of drama in their lives that leads these boys to crime. To dramatize yourself is a child's natural instinct. Maverick says... Ah, yes, Maverick. Lewis broke off. I want Maverick to see Inspector Curry about Edgar. The whole thing is so ridiculous, really.
What do you really know about Edgar Lawson, Mr. Sericold?
Everything, said Lewis positively. Everything, that is, that one needs to know. His background, upbringing, his deep-seated lack of confidence in himself. Miss Marple interrupted.
Couldn't Edgar Lawson have poisoned Mrs. Sericold, she asked.
Well, hardly. He's only been here a few weeks. And anyway, it's ridiculous. Why should Edgar want to poison my wife? What could he possibly gain by doing so?
Well, nothing material, I know. But he might have some odd reason. He is odd, you know.
You mean unbalanced?
I suppose so. No, I don't... Well, not quite. What I mean is... he's all wrong. It was not a very lucid exposition of what she felt. Louis Sericold accepted the words at their face value.
Yes, he said with a sigh, he's all wrong, poor lad. And he was showing such marked improvement.
I can't really understand why he had this sudden setback. Miss Marple leaned forward eagerly.
Yes, that's what I wondered. If...
She broke off as Inspector Curry came into the room.